the topic is that of aging, and two of the disorders that all of us do not want to get are Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And I know without asking you that you want to avoid those if there's any possible way. And there are ways that you can cut down on these two really serious disorders. One is they both may include a dementia phase, including a Parkinson's. Of course, Alzheimer's we know is going to be with a dementia. That's its definition. But Parkinson's may also have a dementia that's very much like Alzheimer's. That may be the first manifestation of Parkinson's, not the tremor or the stiffness of the muscles. So I'd like us to start first with understanding of Parkinson's, of Alzheimer's. And so here we have the title. Can you all see that? The brain and Alzheimer's disease, just so I can know what you are, what your capabilities are and my limitations are. Now here is a diagram of the human brain. It is a most complicated organ of the body. And it is comprised not of one organ. It is not just one organ. It is multiple organs, hundreds of individual organs. Some of them have to do with nothing more complicated than telling the developing embryo how many hairs to put in the little widow's peak that may come right down here on the forehead, or how widely spaced the eyes are. But all of that is controlled ultimately by the brain and its influence on our hereditary mechanisms, the DNA in the cells. You'll notice over here, this is the normal side, and these are called convolutions, and these are called sulci. And this one right here is the normal size. This is a wide one, and we see the full brain here, and you recognize that immediately. Here is the cerebellum, and these are the two cerebral hemispheres. And here is a cut right through the middle of the brain, and that's what we have here. Now, this cut shows this sulcus right here, right over here. That's normal. That's normal size. But you can see that this one over here on the Alzheimer's brain, by comparison, is quite large. You see that? Quite, and a lot of tissue is missing here. Furthermore, this is the ventricle, called the lateral ventricle, and this one is normal size, and this one is a large slit. Furthermore, the tissue that is here, part of that is absent in here. In fact, a good bit of it is absent. You can see that all of this is gone, and that's gone. This is the gray matter. This is the white matter of the brain. This is called the corpus callosum, which connects one hemisphere with the other, and it goes all the way across. This doesn't show it as if it were connecting, but that's because they're actually showing slices of two different brains. But normally, the corpus callosum connects across here and makes all the information that's available in the right side available to the left side if it needs it. And generally speaking, the right side of the heart is the heart that is the part of the brain, is the part that has to do with spiritual matters and fine things having to do with the heart. And this has to do with reading, writing, arithmetic, and understanding spatial distances, being able to draw a fence and make it look like a real fence, or a clock and make it look like a real clock. And when we lose this tissue in here, all of this that we have here, which is only part is left is this, then we lose the ability to do things of that nature. But we are dependent on this side as well to let us know what the significance is of a clock face or of a fence. And so if we were asked to draw one of these and we couldn't even begin to do so, it might be because we have lost some tissue here. Now, up here it tells us this is the language center and this is the memory center here. So the language center on this side is full and complete, and over here on this side, the gray matter along here is thinner, and this sulcus is broader because tissue has been simply lost. Same thing down here. These convolutions are thinner and smaller, and the spaces are broader and are filled with fluid. That's called cerebrospinal fluid. And this is the space that was occupied by tissue is now occupied by simply cerebrospinal fluid. And that, of course, you cannot use to think with. So it's quite a loss, as you can see, to the person. And they are handicapped. But now, not only is it of these specific areas, the hippocampus, which is right in here, and the memory center, not only that, but this whole side of the brain is missing tissue that is not missing here. And when you see the brain at autopsy, it's very clear. Those that are of an Alzheimer's patient or a severe alcoholic, they look about the same. There's a lot of fluid in the head of a person who is a chronic, severe alcoholic with brain disease. A clear difference in the amount of fluid in this one as compared to this one. And so the loss of tissue is what we want to slow down. Now, everybody loses some tissue. We're born with maybe something like 250 billion brain cells, but by the age of about 40 or 50, we only have about 150 billion, or maybe those figures are way off. Who can count that many, that much? But those are estimates. We do know that tissue is lost. Now, a large part of that is normal. A baby's brain develops, and as it develops many different organs. And some of those organs have to do with architectural design, and some of it has to do with planning for the future and understanding what is good for me and what is not good for me, what is religious and what is not. All of that has to be developed during early childhood. And so in order for a child to properly develop one organ, let's say that has to do with religion and what is good for me and what is not good for me, it is quite appropriate that some other things would not develop and that we would actually lose some cells in those organs. Do you understand what I'm saying here? Because we don't want to develop a riskiness. In some people, some children, riskiness is greatly developed. But we want our children to be cautious and careful. And so it's quite proper that the organ that has to do with being accident prone or doing risky behavior, we want that to atrophy and to go down. Parents are involved in this process, do you see? And so it's quite proper that we would lose some brain tissue. We want that to occur. And we want the development of some other parts. Those are the kinds of things that do cause some loss of brain tissue. Now, when somebody forgets something, no matter what age they are in our day, people usually say, well, Alzheimer's starts early, and they may be 28 years old, and it's not Alzheimer's at all. Here are some ordinary factors that can alter the memory. Coffee and related beverages affect the memory. In what way? Good way or bad way? Well, the short-term memory is affected positively. The long-term memory is affected negatively. Okay, What is short-term memory? It's that that lets me go to a telephone directory and say, well, let's see, my mechanic's number is 334-855-4762. Okay, 855-4762. And I remember it long enough to get it written, to get it dialed. Okay, that's short-term memory. And it's good. We like it when we can remember things like that. But professional advancement in people who are coffee drinkers is slower than that of people who are not coffee drinkers. Furthermore, long-term memory is interfered with by the use of coffee, tea, colas, and chocolate. Now that's serious. So I say that coffee drinking is not a part of the activity of a Christian. In fact, I think this is so serious that if you know these things and you continue to use these brown drinks, that is a sin. Because you know something that is not good for you and you do it anyway. That's risky behavior, and that is not the will of God, that you should take risky behavior or do anything that you know is going to shorten your life or make you not be as good a person. By the way, I'm not the only one that says that. Seventh-day Adventists have taught that for over 100 years, that coffee drinking is a sin. That's not to say that to drink one cup of coffee as a medicinal agent is a sin, but to make it a habit of life, I do believe that's a sin. Overeating, eating wrong foods like free fats when you should not. Now, some people should eat some free fat. And we are told in Councils on Diet and Foods, I believe it's about page 250, I'm not real sure, a physician who had gone overboard in his health habits. He was overly conscientious and had gotten so thin that he could hardly even turn, and so weak he could hardly even turn himself in bed. And so Ellen White went to see him and she said, "You should take a little butter on cold bread if this will make your food be more palatable. You should." That was not something that he could indulge perverted appetite with, not at all. He needed that. He needed to have his food to be more palatable. He needed to have more calories. And that little bit of butter would do that for him. So, and I have no problem with that. We need to know who we are, and then we need to act accordingly. So if I'm thin as a rail and not able to do my housework or not able to keep up with my children, it's very clear what I should do, isn't it? I need to eat plenty of food. But if I'm, on the other hand, not that way, then it's very clear what my pattern should be too, isn't it? And so we just look at that. So fats, rich foods, sugary foods, salty foods, icy foods. Can you never eat anything that's cold? No, that does not mean that. It means that you should not inhale ice cream. Do you see? Now, I love ice cream and I eat it frequently. Not dairy ice cream, but banana ice cream. It's nicely done. By just putting a frozen banana through a Champion juicer, and out comes soft serve, something that tastes very much like and is as creamy as vanilla ice, Dairy Queen vanilla, soft serve ice cream. It's really good.
What do you mean by rich foods?
Rich foods are things that are sugary, especially sugar and fat mixed together, and that would include In the home that I grew up in, that would include a stew, a vegetable stew, which also had some beef in it, and maybe a whole stick of margarine. We just put that in stew that four people were going to consume, and so that's rich. And my mother would make these very nice desserts like apple pie, that the crust. You needed no oil, no nonstick of any kind on the pan. You just put the crust in, put the very rich apple filling in it, that was rich. When you took it, it was rich. And on that, we also put our ice cream, which was homemade ice cream. My father was a dairyman. We had plenty of milk. So we made our own ice cream with an old-fashioned crank type. And so we put the dairy milk, sweetened richly, probably a teaspoonful per ounce of the ice cream that we made or more. And that is rich. So those are rich foods. Anything that is rich food, if it's fruits, vegetables, whole grains, it is not rich. Let me list that for you again. Fruits, vegetables, whole grains, it is not rich. Anything else is probably rich. Anything else. Where do we get sugar from?
Sugar cane.
Is sugar rich? Yes. Well, why is it? It came from sugar cane, which is a plant.
It has been
processed. It has been refined, and therefore it is now no longer fruit, vegetable, whole grain. It is a derivative of that. Nuts and seeds are rich. They should be used sparingly. Okay. Spoiled foods, if it has the faintest taint of spoilage about it, we should avoid it. Crowding meals close together. Too many varieties of foods at one meal. Now, yesterday I mentioned to you that my theory, I've never seen this written in a medical journal, but my theory is that if we take big bites, eat fast, too many foods into one meal, and crowd our meals too close together, as we have right here, crowding meals close together. If we do that, we cannot properly handle chemically these many things in the digestive tract, and therefore we get leftover partially digested, partially processed nutrients, which combine together to make a chemical that we find in the brain of Alzheimer's people called amyloid. Amyloid is deposited in the brains of people with Alzheimer's, and that deposit interferes with the processing of information in the brain. That's my opinion. Now, the next thing is stress, anxiety, and depression. Those are ordinary factors that alter memory. Now, all of these things, although they encourage Alzheimer's, they also can cause you to have a poor memory right now, today. And all of these, stress, anxiety, depression, overworking. If you turn from one thing to another, to another, to another, to another, to another, without any time to sort of meditate or consider things between tasks, that can cause you to have a loss of memory. Sleep loss, a very common cause of memory loss. That's temporary. Irregular schedule. Today you eat at 10 o'clock for breakfast, and tomorrow it's 6. And the next day you might skip it altogether or have a snack at about 11, but then you have your lunch at 12:30 or 1. And that will make these leftover products that can be deposited in the brain that we call amyloid. Nobody knows where the amyloid comes from, but it is believed, people like myself think that there are lifestyle things that may cause that. Irregular schedule and clutter in your home or in your office or about your things. That often results from too much to do or from overworking or taking on too many things. Grief, illness, fever, electroshock treatment. A number of things can cause us to have an altered memory that do not represent Alzheimer's disease. Now, there is a global impairment, as I showed you. The whole brain is involved in this. The various functions of the brain are involved, not just memory. Several hints suggest that Alzheimer's disease is linked to Western diet, excessive intake of total calories, sugar, refined carbohydrates, and animal products, and sedentary lifestyle, and any inflammatory process. Now, this came from Epidemiologia e Prevencion. That was in 2002. If anybody wants to look it up, that's in May-June issue of this medical journal. Okay, now what does the brain show in Alzheimer's disease? Vacuoles. From the very word, you know that that's a vacant spot. A vacant spot in the cells of the brain, the functioning part, the so-called neurons. Tangles in the nerve cell fibers. Those are the connecting wires, just like telephone wires, the connecting wires from one cell to another. These are called nerve fibers, or axons and dendrites, and those can get to be tangled. Well, of course, if a telephone wire gets tangled, we know for sure that it's not going to be able to carry a message over it. And then the amyloid plaques that I mentioned. Now, notice this also. Alzheimer's has stages. Stage number one is forgetfulness of recent names, dates, events. Being lost in familiar places, a personality change, and often a large part of that personality change is being recluse. And one of the reasons why they withdraw is because they realize that they can't remember things, and they don't have much interaction with one another, and therefore they just withdraw. That's often a personality change. But sometimes it's a querulousness in somebody who has always been kind and tender-hearted, and now they're demanding and unsatisfied. Stage two, they begin to need help with decisions, taking bath, handling money. They get depressed or agitated and become further secluded. Stage three, they become unaware of time or place or events or close family members, and they may become very suspicious. Suspicion may be up here also in stage two, where and the common one for women is that they lose their purse and they know that somebody has stolen it. And that has happened to me twice, but fortunately that was 30 years ago when I lost my purse and I thought, oh, somebody has stolen my purse. But that often happens. They become suspicious of family members, that family members are taking advantage of them and that they are not being treated fairly in the family. And they require help. They cannot function on their own. So these are stages. Now, what should you do if you have a person in your home who has Alzheimer's or you suspect of having Alzheimer's? The first thing is to aim for their independence. You want to keep them active as long as possible. We had a lady who lived sort of next door to Yuchi Pines. Her name was Mrs. Henry. Mrs. Henry was she loved Yuchi Pines. She'd come from New York, bought a little house there in the community, and she was really sick. And because of the help that she got from Yuchi Pines, she just loved Yuchi Pines. She'd gone from being almost an invalid to being fully functioning and able to take care of her house. So she wanted to live nearby and to use all of her strength and energy to helping us. So we gave her a little job, and she walked four times every day from her house to Yuchi Pines, which was about a mile or a mile and a half, and walked over in the morning, walked back at lunch, in the afternoon, and back home at night. And it was good for her. But then she was 15 years in this little job. She kept the same little job all this time. And her daughter still lived in New York City, I believe in Brooklyn. And dear Sister Henry began to lose her way. When she'd go back home, she could make it all right to Yuchi Pines, but when she was on her way home, sometimes she would walk past her driveway and just go on down in the community, and somebody there would see her, and she would say, "No, now, Mrs. Henry, you go back up this way, and I'll walk with you, and I'll show you where your driveway is." And everybody knew her. She'd walked that road for, 15 years. And her daughter just became wild with fear about her mom getting lost in our little rural Alabama backwoods community where everybody knew her mom and everybody loved her mom. Highly unlikely that anything would happen to her. But she came down and she said, "I'm going to take mom up to my house in Brooklyn." Now remember, she was still working with us and still doing her little job that we had given her to do, happy as a lark. And her daughter took her back up to Brooklyn, and she became a prisoner in four walls. Well, it wasn't but just... And I said to her daughter, "Honey, let's say that she does fall and break her leg, or she has some other accident, or she even gets hit by an automobile and killed. As awful as that would be to contemplate, it's still better, it seems to me, to let her be happy and independent as long as she can be." So we sent some of our students over to live with Sister Henry until her daughter took her away. Within 2 months of being in Brooklyn, she was bedridden. And within about 6 months after that, or 8 months, she died. And she's buried in our little cemetery there at Yuchi Pines. And everybody loves dear Sister Henry. So keep them active and independent as long as possible. Try to help them maintain their quality of life by helping them with labor-saving devices that they can operate. And that won't be too much. Get power of attorney early, because you don't know when they're going to lose the ability to give you the power of attorney. Then second, join a support group to get a better understanding of the general stages of the disease so that you can plan for the future for her or him. Alzheimer's disease may be promoted by insulin resistance. What is that? Now, those of you who have been in my class on diabetes and on hypertension and on cancer, you know what insulin resistance is. What is it? I hear several of you saying it. It is that the cell cannot bring insulin into the cell body. And if insulin cannot get into the cell, it cannot bring glucose in. And we are powered by glucose. It's like our fuel. So we have to have glucose in the cell. If it can't get in, because the cell has no port of entry for insulin, it's not making them, then you're more likely to get Alzheimer's disease. Decreased endothelial function with the production of nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is a thing that keeps a capillary or a small artery or even the large arteries pliable and elastic so that they can properly carry blood. And the loss of nitric acid is one of the early signs of Alzheimer's disease. What makes this? Would you believe it? Rich food, inactivity, eating too much, same things that we know causes Alzheimer's. Also, the same thing that we know causes heart disease and is associated in diabetes. Free radical excess, where do we get free radicals? From city air, from exhaust fumes. And so my counsel to you is out of the cities. This is our counsel and has been for over 100 years. Inflammatory metabolites, and I wish we had the rest of the afternoon that we could talk about that. Because how do we get inflammatory metabolites? It's by some very simple things like eating too much, eating too many varieties, not chewing your food well. Those are things that come up again and again and again by eating refined foods. So almost, I don't need to tell you treatment. I only need to give you the names and tell you to define the abnormality. And homocysteine. What is homocysteine? That is a breakdown product, in an intermediary product between methionine and cysteine, which are two essential amino acids in the body. And if we don't have certain B vitamins, we cannot make that process go all the way to its finish. And it hangs up at the homocysteine level. And so a high homocysteine level is a marker for Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, strokes, and even cancer. So we want to be sure that, and tomorrow I'll be discussing at 1:30 the laboratory tests for those of you who got the lab tests, and we will have a homocysteine level for you in that. I do hope you got the test, because these tests alone cost half as much as the whole test did that we were able to get for you. So we were very pleased to get the price of the testing. Prior to 2000, estrogen deficiency also added to this list, but I can't read that. Before 2000, can you put that? There it is up there. Say that again.
Before
2000, maybe U.S. women were on HRT. What's HRT?
Hormone
replacement therapy. And it was purported to help maintain sexual vitality, supple skin, and energy. And in addition, the hormones combated osteoporosis, and preliminary research suggested that HRT might protect the heart, reduce the risk of dementia, and protect against declines in memory and mental skills. But, subsequently, studies demonstrating the benefits of estrogen are not conclusive in stating that estrogen prevents or delays Alzheimer's. Further, a flood of work has clearly proven that estrogen has neuronal effects consistent with a role in cognition and memory. This is cognition is memory. Neuronal are brain cells in the gray matter cells. Oh, that's serious.
Negative.
But research data clearly showed no improvement in mental function in older women taking HRT. And more disturbing, a twofold increase in the risk of dementia like Alzheimer's disease. Now, you might want to write that article down. That's the Journal of the American Medical Association, May 28, 2003. It's volume of the American Medical Association, 289, page 2651 to 2662. We recommend women keep their ovaries and eat vegan, which is high in plant estrogens, and avoid hormone replacement therapy. I don't know. I don't remember. It does tell. It tells in there, but I don't know. But it was long-term use, more than 5 years. More than 5 years.
Uh-huh.
Hormone replacement therapy in women. As supposed to treat estrogen deficiency. Now, let me ask you. In a little girl, before her menstrual periods begin, her estrogen level is low. Is she hormone deficient? No. After the menopause, a woman's hormone level is low, about like it is, or maybe not quite so low, as it is before she starts her menstrual period. Is she hormone deficient? I say no, she's not. And that none of these things that were purported to be true are really true. A woman should have these hormones to go down. They're heavy-duty hormones, and they're not needed in older age groups. Okay. Any questions about that? Mobile phones and Alzheimer's. The use of mobile telephones may lead to the early onset of Alzheimer's in young people, according to research in Sweden. Now, how do you manage a cell phone? Can you live without a cell phone? I don't know how we ever did. So, you don't have one? Well, you look like you're living okay. Well, I don't see how I could live without a cell phone. So? Say that again? Mobile phones, yes. Yeah, another word for cell phones. Okay, here we are. We researched this at UT Pines and discovered that that if you're going to have a mobile phone or a cell phone, you should get yourself a corded earpiece like this. Now this goes on my cell phone, and this simply fits in my ear just like this, and so I can drive along and be in communication with somebody. If my car breaks down on the side of the road, I can be in communication, but it's through this, not with a cell phone up here, because it's the the microwaves from the cell phone that heat up the brain and is believed to be destructive to the brain cells. And so if you're going to use a cell phone, use this one. Now the rage these days is the Bluetooth. Bluetooth sits up there on your ear very neatly, and it looks very smart in the young people. But give them one of these and tell them why. That it's because the microwaves, even in the Bluetooth, are suspected of being something that might not be good for the brain. And for me, that's all I need to know. I don't want to have to wait 30 years until they have lots of people with cancer of the brain or Alzheimer's disease or whatever. If they even suspect it, I'm going to get myself whatever I can do to eliminate that problem. What about what? I don't know. Texting. You know, that is not a problem for you, because your only problem is that if you text while you're driving, you're 27 times more likely to have an accident than you are if you are not texting. So don't text. Don't let your children text while they're driving either. Okay, now one of the things that has come up repeatedly has been that thing of exercise, that we need to exercise more. And so somebody says, oh, but doctor, I can't exercise. I'm too disabled. So are they exempted from doing exercise? And the answer is no. They have to do exercise also, but how do they do it? Well, they can do it from a chair. And Vilma Myers is going to show you some exercises that you can do from your chair.
And the first thing we're going to do is start with the head. We're going to do neck rolls. We're just going to do a few. And you do what you can do. Don't do any more to hurt yourself. Now stop. We're going to go the other way. You always want to do both ways. Yes. Okay. The next thing would be ear to neck. And you're stretching all in here into the other side. Now we're going to work on our shoulders. So we're going to start by bringing our shoulders up to our ears. As far as you can. Slowly. Okay. Next is our arms. Stretch your arms out. Oh, not enough room. What you can do, okay, now we're going to go small circles to the front, then a little bigger. And all this you can do while you're sitting in your chair, if you have to, a little bigger. And you want to do these at least 10 times. I'm going to stop, by the other way, small circles, a little bigger, and even bigger. And then you want to do at least 10 of each of these each day. It's right. So now we're going to hold on to our chair. We're going to do some leg, and you might not get, you probably won't be able to do it really well right there. So you can. What we're going to do is some leg abduction, and that you just take this, your leg, and you just go out to the side, and back in, out, and back in, and you want to do 10 of these each time. Can you see? I'm sorry. Can you see what I'm out? Okay. The next one is to the back, and you want to be careful if you have back pain. You don't want to go very far. And this is for the gluteus muscles, and you're just going to go backwards, bring it back, and you want to do 10 of these each time. And you can feel the gluteus from doing this. And these are very, very simple. And the next, we're going to do a leg extension. We're not doing many because we don't want to take up Dr. Agatha's time. But okay. Now, if you're brave, we're going to try to do a squat. And you don't have to go very far. You can just go this far. Or, and never come all the way up to where your knees are straight. You just want to go. Always sticking the bottom out.
Keep your toes pointing straight in front of
yes.
you so that the knee
internal
structures of the knee will be in the best position.
Yes. Okay. All right. No, you don't want to lean forward. You just want to, if you're leaning forward, okay. All right. And then the other things you can do is walk in place, and you're just going up, down, up, down. These are very, very good for you to do. And I was telling someone today, it's good if you could do these 10 minutes before you eat and 10 minutes after you eat. Okay? The next thing that you can do is for your tummy. We'll sit in a chair. And you just put your hands right here. On a chair like this, can everybody see that? You're just going to push yourself up on the chair, put your hands right here, and just bring your legs up. I'm too far up. Like this. Squeeze your tummy. Then back down. Bring it up. Can you feel that? It wears you out. You'll be perspiring after 10. These are very, very good for the tummy. Just bring it up as far as you can. All right, there's many others we can do, but for now you can get started with these. And just keep it in mind that just walking in place in your house like this, moving your arms all around, it's very, very good for you to do. As long as you can move, just keep moving it. It can just be in the house. No, you don't. You're better off to be outside in the sunshine and fresh air. It's better, more beneficial for you.
Okay, now that's good advice for people who have Alzheimer's. Now, let's notice another thing. Here is some activity. If you can join a group, that's good. Now, let me encourage you. If you need to have exercise like this that isn't like gardening, then get gardening will make you get out there and do it, won't it? You look at your garden, you see all those weeds. And it's get out there, get those weeds out, or it's go and harvest something, it's ready, it's going to spoil, or the birds are going to get it. And so this is gardening does have a sort of a coercive factor built into it. But if you don't have that available to you, you still need to exercise, but I'd get an exercise partner.
Just change your yard all the way around.
Absolutely, change it around, dig up your flowers and plant vegetables. Yes, that's good. Now, do what you can. Move any way that you can and join a group of some kind or get an exercise partner, somebody in your neighborhood who also needs to walk and walk together. Now, there have been times when I had an exercise partner at Uchi Pines and we did what we call terrain stress, where we get out in the woods and do some activity in the woods, like clearing off a little piece or making a trail, or piling up some dead limbs and burning those. But I have always enjoyed what goes on indoors more than what goes on outdoors, and so it was a chore to me to quit things in the office and go outside. So I had an exercise partner. She came every day. When she got off at 5, she came to my office And we, I would get my exercise clothes. My office was in my home at that time. And so I would get my exercise clothes on and be ready at 5, or shortly after 5. And often, I would not have done it, except that I saw my exercise partner coming by the window of my office, and she had to go down that way and come inside that way. That's when I would jump up and get my shoes on and get ready to go out to exercise. And if she had not come, I would not have gone out that day. And so there is a coerciveness about having an exercise partner. Let me encourage you to do that. Besides that, there is somebody in your neighborhood who needs to get out, and you will be coercive for her as well. Okay. Now, treatment of dementia, increase the ratio between omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. Now, you know what they are. Omega-3 fatty acids come from flaxseed and from chia seeds and from some from avocado, some from olives. Those are also helpful. Walnuts are very high, and certain seed oils are very high. Antioxidants. Where do we get antioxidants? Fruits and vegetables, whole grains, we get antioxidants from them. Nuts and seeds. Do we get them from meat, milk, eggs, and seeds? Meat, milk, eggs, and cheese? Not likely. Not very likely. Okay. So we get, where do we get, what are phyto anythings, phytochemicals? Phyto means what? What was it? I heard. Somebody said plant. That's right. It's a plant. So a plant estrogen, or a plant sterol, or a plant hormone, those are phytohormones. Okay. Now let's take a little bit on Parkinson's disease. And I will try to finish a little early so that you can ask questions if anybody has any. I want to talk a little bit about symptoms, cause, prevention, and treatment. So the two principal symptoms are resting tremor. Now, the old folks, the old doctors used to call this the pill roller's disease because the Parkinson's person would get this kind of a tremor at rest when they were sitting down, sitting around doing nothing. They gathered a tremor that was sort of like this. And the pill rollers, the pharmacists used to roll their pills this way. They'd get the little pill and roll it up like that. So it's called pill roller's disease. Stiffness of the muscles, so resting tremor and stiffness. That has been shown in many nursing home studies that were done in nursing home inmates who had a tremor that if they simply used one of these little squeeze things or a squeeze ball, and did that every day, that they had several good benefits. Just that, just sitting around doing this whenever they were doing whatever they were doing, listening to a lecture or talking with one another, if they just squeezed on one of those little spring handheld things, or they squeezed a little child's rubber ball, sponge ball, it would help them with their muscle tremor, and it would also help them not to get glaucoma. Glaucoma. Now, the first time I read that in the Journal of American Medical Association, I thought, the journal has gotten into voodoo here. How could just doing this make you not have so much glaucoma? But it turns out that just doing this will reduce the carbon dioxide content of the blood, which then helps you with glaucoma. Eventually, they get difficulty in swallowing. These are symptoms of Parkinson's. Fixed facial expression, stooping, and a shuffling gait. And their gait is somewhat like, of course, they're stooped, and both stooped in the shoulders as well as stooped at the hips. And it's sort of a fall and a catch. They walk along, and it's sort of like they're walking and they catch themselves in a short fall. That's the typical gait of the Alzheimer's, of the Parkinson's. Cause is not known, but there are several suspects. And they are exactly the same as with Alzheimer's, or almost. except that these are not associated with Alzheimer's, the several fruits, and teas made from their seeds, barks, or leaves. Papaya is one of those fruits. The whole custard apple family is in those fruits. Now, these are tropical fruits that are grown in the West Indies and other places, as like Guam and Guadeloupe. And in these places, West Indies, Guam, Guadeloupe, the Caribbeans, all of these are places where Parkinson's is more common. And in England, keeping the traditional diet, the traditional West Indian diet, even after they have moved to Great Britain, they still have a high incidence of Parkinson's disease. So it is believed that these fruits, papaya, custard apple, and so forth, are possibly involved in that.
Did you say the
whole apple? The whole custard apple. Custard apple, that's like sweet sop, which is in the custard apple family. Sweet sop. Sweet sop is a tropical fruit that grows in the West Indies. And so those are all members of that family. They're delicious fruit. And I was sorry to hear this about them. Okay. Some things seem fairly well connected. Reducing the intake of animal fat and sugar. Avoiding exposure to certain metals, and those include aluminum, iron, manganese, mercury, cadmium, and copper. Now, iron, but, Dr. Thrash, I thought that iron was essential for life. Yes, it is. What?
Ferric.
Yeah. Uh-huh, yes, same stuff, elemental, iron. Okay, iron. We cannot live without it. We have to have hemoglobin in order to carry oxygen in the blood in sufficient quantities. And how could it possibly be that iron could cause us to increase our risk for Alzheimer's disease? It works like this. If you get more than is ideal for you, and tomorrow when I discuss lab tests, and I hope everybody will come. It's not just for those who got there who will have lab reports, but anybody can come. If you get more iron than is needed, then it acts as a pro-oxidant. Now, we've been talking about antioxidants that are present in vegetables and fruits and whole grains. Now I'm talking about a pro-oxidant. So if an antioxidant decelerates the rate at which we age, what would a pro-oxidant do? It would accelerate the rate at which we age. So we could say that iron in too great a quantity will accelerate aging. And that increases our risk of Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and cancer. Certain cancers are also known to be associated with too much iron.
What about iron?
Cooking in iron skillets is fine for women. For women before the age of 50. After the age of 50, you can retire your iron cookware and give it and pass that down to your young grandchildren. Iron supplement is not a wise thing unless you are proven to need iron. How do you know? It has to be a lab test. Now, there are certain things that you can do that are self-examinations. And if this conference invites me to come back next year, I hope to present for you a series of self-testing. I'm going to show you one of these in the next lecture on aging. But you can do certain things that can help you to know when your hemoglobin is too low. Yes?
Did you say that do not use iron?
Yes, do not use iron supplements. Yes, after age of 50. And men should probably never use iron. Use iron supplements. Can you know if you're getting too much iron? Two ways. They're both lab tests. Unless you can tell from some of the things that I will be telling you tomorrow in the, I'm not sure. And it has to do with color of the skin. But if your hemoglobin is above 12.5 and you're under the age of 50 and you're a woman, probably is a little bit something to watch. If you are over the age of 50 and it's over 13, you're a woman, 13 point, say, 2 or 3, maybe even just 13. It's too high. If your iron level in your blood, we'll have that level for you, I think, also tomorrow on the lab test. If your iron level is above 80, that's too high. But the laboratory will tell you it's all right if it goes up to 150. That's or higher, but that is clearly too high in my book. Yes. The way, there are several ways. Don't take a supplement. Get plenty of exercise. Garlic will help you to reduce it. And probably also cilantro. Do you know that little herb, cilantro? Grow it in your own garden along with parsley. And that will make a nice green smoothie for you. Okay. Now, some at-risk persons for metals include pipe fitters, electrical workers, chemists, firefighters. Now, those who have an exposure to pesticides, especially the organophosphate pesticides, they have a greater risk of Parkinson's. Head injuries, those who've been in accidents, or those who've been in the, what I call the pugilistic sports, or combative sports, all of them, you run the risk of a head injury, which then increases your risk of getting Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. Overeating, under-exercising. I want to tell you about Dick from New York. Dick was a man from a prominent family in New York City. He lived right down in Manhattan. His widow still does. His wife, he's still living. Dick got in touch with my husband about 30 years ago, and he said, "It looks to me as if I've got this strange tremor, and I don't like it. Can you tell me what the problem is?" So he said, "Well, could you come and let me examine you?" So he arranged to come to UT Pines and to stay during a patient session. His wife came with him, and she's a friend of mine now, after years, 30 years of being medical help for their family, children and everybody. And my husband put him on a, put Dick on a Parkinson's routine, which included lots of exercise, a vegan diet, and being very careful, very abstemious even, in the number of calories that he ate. So he was always thin, and when he came to UT Pines, he was a runner. He was not jogging, he was a runner. You'd see him out there with this, going around the circle there at UT Pines on the main campus. And he owns several banks. He owns some banks in China and some and in New York, and he kept those until about 12 years ago. Now that would have been 18 years, and then he began to close some, or sell off some of his banks. He was by that time getting so that he was more involved with that. 18 years with Parkinson's. And but he was a runner. He was very careful about his diet. His wife still is. And but he is now, after 30 years, he is now so that he's housebound. And his wife housebound. He can't go outside the house now. But that's 30 years of having Parkinson's, and that only occurred about in the last maybe 18 months. Before that, he was active in his profession. And for all that length of time, he had Parkinson's, but because he made changes early in the disease, it went very slowly, very slowly. So that when he is, I don't know his age now, I have never been his doctor, but I've always been his wife's doctor, and she gives me a report on him from time to time. Caused his Parkinson's? Nobody knows the cause of Parkinson's. We have these suspicions. Eating too much and under-exercising, those are the two most common things that keep cropping up in almost every case. Overeating. And overeating is of three kinds. You can eat too much. You can eat too many varieties. You can crowd your meals too close together. Those are the three ways to overeat. Question? Aluminum?
For Parkinson's
and Alzheimer's.
Okay. What about these drinks from soda cans?
Aluminum's from aluminum cans, I don't like that. And I don't like the phospho compounds that are put in soft drinks. You can look on the can in the list of ingredients, and it will give you some phospho or phos compound on there. All of those are damaging to people. They damage the bones. They're damaging to neurons. And the aluminum cans are suspect. Oh, and by the way, these plastic bottles, while I'm on it, I wanted to tell you the other day when I drank a bottle of plastic from a plastic bottle. These kinds, they are really good in a pinch. But they should be a pinch one. It should not be your regular way of getting water from these. If you drink from a plastic bottle, it should be one that's dark, not one of these. And especially if it begins to do this kind of thing, and some people will do like this and squeeze, that's not the way to drink from this, because any time that you make it crackle like that, you're getting a double, triple dose of bisphenols and a lot of other things. This kind is better. This kind that's opaque. You cannot see through it. If it is transparent, then that means that it has the bisphenols in it. Yes? Foil, aluminum foil. Aluminum foil is hard aluminum, actually, and is less reactive than aluminum cookware, apparently. Now, has aluminum been shown to be the cause of Alzheimer's or Parkinson's? And the answer is no, but there is some association in these. And that has been discovered. And so I'm just like I am with cell phones. If there is even a suspicion, the brain is so important to us that I say, if there is even a suspicion that there's a problem, it's not too hard to eliminate aluminum cookware. And I hope that nobody here will ever again drink a soft drink. Especially not a cola, one that's one of those brown drinks. Don't drink any of those brown drinks. What is that? What is that? Yes, root beer. You know, I don't know too much about root beer. It probably is not good for you. But I haven't investigated that one. Root beer, highest? And the sugar content? Maybe. Yes. What about antiperspirants that have aluminum? They do. They have it. It has not been proven, but that there has been an association discovered in some research papers. Okay. Yes.
What about the excitotoxins
that you hear about in soy sauce, Bragg's aminos, and similar brown flavoring agents that we use in the kitchen. The major researcher in that is a man named Blaylock, and he's from Jackson, Mississippi, and he has done some very good research, and my understanding is that he was a highly respected neurosurgeon and was a very smart man, and he has sort of devoted his life to publicizing the fact that glutamate and aspartate. Now, glutamic acid is natural in the body, and we We have to have it. It's an essential amino acid. Aspartic acid is another amino acid. It's also essential in the body. But when they change to glutamate or aspartate, it's my understanding that that is when they become the excitotoxins to the neurons and cause them to become so overexcited that they actually die. And so I just say, I grew up without soy sauce. We didn't know this as a flavoring agent when I grew up in South Georgia. And my mother's food tasted, I've already told you, tasted wonderful. And it was unhelpful in some other ways, but not unhelpful in some ways. And we didn't have to worry about soy sauce because we didn't have it. And I say that if we could season our foods back then without it, that we can now too. So we don't use it in our household. And most of the time when my children were growing up, we didn't use it. Now, we have about 3.5 minutes. And let me give you numbers. 1, 2, 3. Anybody else have a question? Then we'll get 4. Number one.
Is there, out of all these things that I've heard today,
yes,
possibility of them lowering my
air cell? All right. Let me repeat the question. If all of these things are done, and you feel very good about your lifestyle, will that help you to lower your medication? I can't say yes that it will. But I can say this, that if you institute these changes early in your life and you are careful all of your life in doing these things, that your risks are reduced. That I can say. Question number 2.
I was in the doctor's office the other day. I was looking at this medical magazine and it was talking about a herpes vaccine. And
uh-huh.
It listed the ingredients.
A herpes vaccine. Listed the ingredients.
Gelatin.
Monosodium glutamate. Yes. Why is that in vaccines? Vaccines. Let's see. Do I want to be ridden off campus on a rail, tarred and feathered this afternoon? I think I don't. So I don't know why it was there. I will tell you this. When I used to be a hospital pathologist and I was the chief pathologist at St. Francis Hospital, I ran a bacteriology department and we made vaccines. When a doctor would ask us to for a patient who had a certain germ that they'd been infected with for a long time, like with osteomyelitis or some other thing of that nature, we'd make a vaccine. We'd culture the germ and carefully make a vaccine. And I carefully oversaw each step, and I required my bacteriologist to bring me at each step exactly what she had done so that I could know that it was done exactly right, because I did not want to injure anybody with a vaccine. When we gave that vaccine, handmade, not made in, you know, multiples, we handmade these with the greatest of care. When I handed that vaccine to the clinician, I would say, here's the vaccine. And we made it carefully. But I never felt really good about the vaccines, because we had to put preservatives in them. We put some other things, some stabilizers and the like, and I don't remember now how we made them. But I do remember how carefully I was watching over that process and my anxiety when we had the finished product. I continue to have the same anxiety. Question number 3. Yes.
I know that what you say is said by others, that gardening is good exercise. And I cannot understand that. I'm really blessed with a good rototiller. I can walk down with one hand and it is so easy, it just will almost go by itself.
Yeah, rototiller. Goes down by itself and you hold it with one hand and you walk down the row with it.
Once you get to the healing done,
Once you get to the tilling,
break a little bit in the garden.
Break a little bit in the garden. Once you start planting,
it's not hard to plant.
It's not hard to plant.
Hardly any exercise.
Hardly any exercise.
Around the
you pull
hardly, any exercise.
Hardly any exercise in all that.
Take the plants.
Hardly any exercise at all.
Really?
Where'd you get that bucket from? I have to go to my shed to get my bucket that I bring. And when I walk down the road, it's true, I can walk down the road so that I don't have to walk where I've just rototilled or cultivated with a little cultivator. And I walk down there with that. Oh, I will have to get down from this end to the other end by walking. I walk down there, and then I have to pull that machine, and then I have to turn it around, and I get it to going down the other row. And I have a big garden. And so these machines are not, they don't get down there by themselves. They get down there by my doing something and my walking beside them. And, you know, when you walk on in your garden, it's not quite the same as walking on a paved road, is it? It takes a little bit more effort to get the foot up out of the soft ground, especially after I have rototilled it or cultivated it. So, yes, gardening is good. And then when I've got my vegetables, it doesn't take too much time. I have to go to the kitchen, get a knife, and come back. I have to walk there. I don't have a cart that I can go there and come back. I have to walk. There's a lot of walking, a lot of stooping, a lot of lifting involved in gardening. When I go to garden, I don't go leisurely because I've got a lot to do in a short length of time. So I keep up my speed. And I recommend that you keep up your speed, get a big garden, and keep the weeds out of it, keep the weeds out of the fence rows. It takes a lot of work to do that.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright, all rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.